Welcome to the Washington AI Network podcast. I'm Tammy Haddad, the founder of the Washington AI Network, where we bring together official Washington policymakers, DC insiders, and AI experts who are challenging, debating, and just trying to figure out the rules of the road for artificial intelligence.
Hi, everyone. I'm Sumi Somaskanda, in for the inimitable Tammy Haddad. Tammy does that all the time and it works, so I figured I could do it as well. Welcome to the Washington AI Network podcast, and welcome to House of 1229, this amazing space for a conversation about the future of how we move, how we explore, and how AI is becoming the engine of global travel. We are joined by really one of the most respected voices in travel and tech, Glenn Fogel. He's the CEO of Booking Holdings, which includes some of the most iconic brands in travel, from Booking.com, Priceline, Kayak, OpenTable. Glenn, welcome to the Washington AI Network podcast.
Well, thanks for having me. And thanks, everybody, for coming.
It's amazing. You've been at Booking for 26 years. You've seen multiple waves of technological change in travel. So before I ask you about the AI bit, between 2000 and 2026, what has changed most in travel? We cannot remember, I think, what travel was like in 2000. I can't. So what do you think the biggest change is?
So it is interesting, because I got asked a similar question earlier today in an interview we were doing. And there are people there, and I was trying to describe to them about, well, you had to buy a thing called a ticket, and had this thing called paper, and there was this red carbon behind. They had no clue what I was talking about. Just literally.
Gen Z.
Really, you see the change. Back then, you had to go see somebody, or maybe you made a phone call, but then like, are you going to mail me the ticket? In fact, when we first started our company, we actually printed the tickets in our building, and then we'd send them out by FedEx to people. It was that crazy back then. And it really became a thing when they actually, in certain places where they became a rule, you had to go ticketless, and you weren't allowed to do tickets. There are certain countries that said, you're going all ticketless. I think China may have been one of the first ones that did that. And everything about it has made it so much easier, better, except one thing, though. People still find it incredibly frustrating. Because it is. And the fact is there a single person here, raise your hand, if you can say, I've never had a frustrating moment in planning, organizing, executing, or going through my travel. Anybody? No, right. If I said, travel, I love doing it, but the planning, it sucks. Would anybody disagree with that? Right? It does. And back in the day, that early part, you had a thing where you go to a person, and a travel agent, a human travel agent. And that person, she knew a bit about you, and she kind of knew what you could afford and what you'd like, and you'd talk back and forth, and she knew your family, and she'd say, okay, you can do this, and here's some hotels, and all planned out based on what you knew, personalized it. And then you gave her one thing, you gave her a check, which you all know, they didn't know what a check was either. I'd explain that to them. And then if anything went wrong, you just called her on the phone, or somebody, one of the older people said, yeah, you go to a payphone. They didn't know that one, of course. But you call, and they fix everything for you. Nowadays, if you think about it, it seems worse, doesn't it? But that's what we need to recreate using technology, and that's what we call our connected trip, is using technology. All the things we can do through digital process, the database knows so much more than anybody, human being with brochures and books knew. And it reminds everything about your history of what you like, what you don't like. And it has the ability to know all the things you may want, what price level, et cetera. You can interact. And now with Gen AI, you can actually have that conversation with that agent.
So how does that work, this connected trip? I mean, break that down for us. What does that look like?
So I happen to have my phone with me right now. This is like a travel agent in my pocket. And I can go, and I'll just say Priceline. I'll go because I like Priceline. And I just go to Priceline. It's called Penny. It says, hello, I'm Penny. How can I help you? I can just start the conversation with, hi, I want to go to London. Well, that's very interesting. When would you like to go? What would you like to do? And you'll have that conversation. Now, if I have been using Penny for some time, it knows my history. It knows all the things I like. And by the way, one of the most frustrating things before we came with Gen AI is for years, I do a hotel search on our own site and it would throw up some nice hotels and throw up like 1-2 stars. I am now in my 60s. I am not going to 1 or 2 star hotels. No ma. But that's the personalization that we want because it's with you all the time. I like this example because I spent a lot of time in Amsterdam. How many of you have been to Amsterdam? Great. Okay, how many of you, keep your hands up. Keep your hands up if you took a boat tour, a canal trip. Did you go to the Rijksmuseum? You're going to go to Amsterdam. You're going to arrive Tuesday. You set this all up. We have it all done because we suggest these and you like it. And you got your tickets for Wednesday to go do the canal boat. Good. You got Thursday for the Rijksmuseum, right? You arrive Tuesday. We know. Looks like it's going to rain on your boat day and it's going to be sunny on your museum day. We send you that message. Hi, weather doesn't look good for this. Let's switch it around. What do you say? We can do it all for you. Just one thing done. And we'll do it all for you. That's what you want. That's what we are building for you. And then you will be happy. And then you will come back to us and we'll do well.
It sounds like what you're saying is generative AI really has the potential to be a complete disruptor in the industry.
It is an incredible thing, not just for the travel industry, but as we all know, for everything.
Yeah.
The world is changing very, very fast.
What are some of the ways that you see this connected trip concept growing even further? What are the next steps and how that can serve in the ways that you were just describing?
Well, one of the things it already is doing really well, and that's improving customer service. Because as we know, things go wrong in travel. It's not our fault. I just want to make that right up. We have nothing to do, but just let you know. But we know bad things happen. And being able to get a solution to that, first of all, connected trip, having everything together makes a big difference. So you got the plane ticket and you got it all done fine. You're all excited. You left the house and you're going to the airport and the supposed to take off in 2 hours, time is fine, and you get a text message. Today you get the text message that says, oh, your flight looks like it's going to be delayed. It's not going to be 2 hours from now. It's going to actually be 6 hours from now. And you're like, and that's all you get. That's it. Nothing more. What we want to be able to give you in customer service is we have another flight that you can take that'll only be 4 hours. So you'll not have to wait 6. You'll only 4 and it'll be great. And then because it's a connected trip, we know then you had a car to pick you up. We're going to change that for you automatically. We know that your dinner reservations that you set with OpenTable, well, that ain't going to work now. So we already looked to change that for you for the later reservation. Unfortunately, there are no seats available at that time. But there's another restaurant just down the street, same type of food. We'd be happy to make that reservation available. And by the way, because it's been such a lousy time, we're going to give you that free bottle of wine and notify your other party that was going to meet you and all that's going to be wonderful. That's what we're building right now. Now, are we there yet? No, but what we do have is better customer service than it used to be because using Gen AI enables so many things to be better. First of all, you don't have to talk to a human being to get a lot of things done. Gen AI handles it all. You're talking to somebody, you think it's a human, it's not. It's Gen AI talking to you back, I'm telling you. OpenTable, we're doing that. You make a reservation at some restaurants now. You didn't use the app. For some reason, you wanted to call. I don't know why, but you did. You called. You didn't speak to a human. Sometimes you probably do. Sometimes you don't. When you're not talking about human, you don't know you're not talking to the human. You're talking to a Gen AI voice. And it's able and just as well. Think about what that saves in terms of the time. The hostess doesn't have to be picking up the phone all. She can do her other job there. In our thing, when we're doing travel customer service, in the past, the agent would have to summarize all the things happening in the problem so that if it doesn't get solved right there, that the next agent that you call when you're even angrier will actually know all the notes to be able to, well, Gen AI is recording it and changing it all right there and writing it down, summarizing it. But even more so, has anybody here ever worked in a customer service shop ever? So you know scripts, right? So scripts are all pre-done, all written out, all that. But with generative AI, interpreting what you're saying as a customer, being able to understand that and be able to figure out what's the best solution and coming back, the customer service agent can read that and say, hi, this is the thing to do. Makes it faster, simpler, easier. How many of you have waited an hour for customer service on a travel thing, right?
Yeah, for sure.
The great thing when you have Gen AI, you don't need a lot more people. You don't have to wait. It should pick up immediately. If you have the right amount of compute, this should not be an issue at all. You shouldn't have to wait at all in the future. That also better. That's why I'm so optimistic about it. It's going to be so much better than it's been in the past in all of these areas. So it's wonderful. We just have to get from where we are today to where we want to be, going as fast as we can.
How does that look like in terms of adoption? I was really interested, to see that connected trip transactions grew in the high 20% range last year, which is pretty impressive. But what role is AI playing in that adoption itself among your customers?
Well, I think it's helping. I think it's definitely helping because using AI, we're able to make a better suggestion in terms of we know what you just bought and what you may want also, being able to cross-sell and come up with things and giving you discounts because you bought this, we can give you a discount here. Those type of things are really helpful. But I want it to be more. It's funny. People say that's incredible, up 20%. So just for scale. So last year, we did $186 billion of total transaction, just to give you a side note. What does that really mean? In terms of market capitalization, we're a public company. So our market cap is approximately twice what number two is. That's the amount of the scale we have. And we're still a rather small part of the overall travel industry. Total travel industry, probably north of $3 trillion. It's hard to know exactly where the money is. So as a percent of the total amount, you know, more than 5%, but not much. But the fact is, really big. It's a huge amount that we have to work with. But I don't think 20%, that's lovely. But I'm like, well, I know they didn't just buy one thing. They bought other stuff from somebody else. Why? It's interesting, though. People ask that question, too. They say, well, they bought a hotel. Did they buy any attractions, something to do there or not? And I say, well, I know they did because they didn't go on a trip just to stay in the hotel room the whole time. I know that. But they didn't buy it from us. And my question to my team is, well, why not? Why did they buy it some other way? What should we do more? What signals did we not get that we need to put in so they'll buy it from us?
Which platform under Booking Holdings is actually driving that the most, would you say?
Booking.com is by far the largest. Which, again, it's interesting. Again, size matters in so many things. Priceline's a huge company. OpenTable are huge. These are billion-dollar companies. These are enormous companies worth lives. To scale, Booking is just so much bigger. So if you round off and you look at our 10K, just round it off, call 90% of the business is Booking.com, I'm rounding, but that's you know, that means that, wait, so only 10% of your business is a Priceline, of Kayak, of Agoda? And I'm like, yeah, but that's still 10% of whatever, you know, we're $150 billion. That's a lot of money.
Insider question. On Booking.com, my husband has told me we have genius level 3 VIP.
Yes. Yeah.
How many levels are there?
So that's one of those great questions to ask. And I understand this is on the record.
It is.
So, you're in a very good level. If you buy more, you may get better.
Okay.
Maybe you're the top.
Well, what about the question of how horizontal AI platforms could actually disrupt your industry? You know, if people are going to go to Google Gemini to look up their flights and perhaps other attractions that they could book, what does that mean for your business?
That's a big issue for everybody, is do the horizontal large language models dominate everything, take over everything? And we're all aware of what just happened the last couple of weeks. We know that some new models dropped. Get a couple of people saying everything agentic is going to solve everything, and every company that is based on old software companies will disappear. And we all watched approximately a trillion dollars of market cap get vaporized in a couple of weeks based on that. It's come back a little bit and stuff, because, well, wait, maybe not. So there was that belief. There was that thing going around. People say, well, people won't need a Booking.com or any of those competitors because they'll just go to ChatGPT and then they'll go straight and buy it from the supplier. So a couple of things to understand about this. One, certainly the large international chains are doing what they can and working to make sure that they can try and get somebody off of a large language model to go directly to that international chain. They're big. They have big IT departments. They can work and put together an MPC server and connect and put all the information through and all that. But approximately, a little bit under 90% of our hotel business is not with the top 10 international chains. So the idea that this little 20-room chateau thing in France is going to be connecting somehow to ChatGPT and getting seen, and then the person goes straight there, that is not happening. One. Two, the complexity of how you get all that information and be able to display it in the right way and get the right availability, the right pricing, and then throw on top of that the payments. You know, we do payments approximately 100 different ways, payments. Now, I don't know how you would even understand that question, because we're in America, we're in the U.S. So what are you talking? People say, what are you talking about? I take out my Visa, take out my MasterCard. You know, the rich people pull out the American Express Black Card. Other people don't do that way. They want to pay in the way they like to pay. And everybody thinks, oh, yeah, like China, Alipay, WeChat Pay. Well, we have someone from the Netherlands. Where, yes.
Ruth, what is
ideal?
Yeah, so it's your bank transfer.
Exactly. So that's a really important thing, because if you are that small hotel in the Netherlands and you have a visitor coming from, oh, I don't know, let's say coming from Africa, and the person from Africa wants to use M-Pesa,
right?
The small hotelier in the Netherlands does not want to take M-Pesa at all. they would like to have euros deposited in their bank. We will take the money in peso. That's good for the customer who's traveling to the Netherlands. We will put euros into the bank account of the hotel in the Netherlands, and we will do it cheaper than it would have been if they had tried to do it some other way, because it's easier for us to do that type of transaction than for the customer have to do what? Go to an FX store and actually change money? God, do they maybe do that anymore? I don't think so. And it'd be horrible. So that's another way. Then the regulations. A lot of people don't understand. If you are a merchant of record in the travel industry, there are a lot of rules that apply, particularly not just the monetary stuff. If you're transferring money around, now you got a whole bunch of stuff there. Tax stuff you have to deal with. But just in general, merchant of record in Europe, I got to deal with DMA, Digital Markets Act. I deal with DSA, Digital Service Act. I got to deal with EU AI Act. I got to deal with PSP. I got a PSB platform to PDP platform to business. I got to deal with DAC 7. The list is endless. And there was just an announcement a couple days ago where OpenAI came out and said, we have no intention of doing travel as an agent. And Google, some time ago, has said, we're not doing merchant of record. And Google thought about doing this a long time ago and done a couple, and they pulled back. And there's a reason. They can make a lot more money just making us buy ads on their service, and then they don't have to touch any of the complexity of it. So it's good for everybody. And I think that's why people realize this idea you're going to vibe code companies like ours or Salesforce or ServiceNow, that's a little fantasy.
Well, on regulation, as generative AI becomes more embedded in your industry, in the travel industry, what do you think policymakers, and we have policymakers represented here as well, regulators need to know most about how this technology actually works?
It's the dawn of a new age, and the problem is nobody has a good sense of what the future is going to be. I mean, think about how fast things have changed. When ChatGPT first came out, 22, and you first tried it, and you're kind of like, it's a nice little party trick. Okay, I can make a limerick. Great. And from that to where we are now, and then think where it's going to be from now to next year. And for everybody who's been out in the valley recently and listening, they're all the rumor of what is the new models coming down, how much more powerful it's going to be. How many of us here have vibe coded something for your own personal use? Anything? Anybody? Somebody did. Yes. Okay, right. So you know, you see what's happening. And that's the personal stuff, but it's coming down so fast. So we're going to ask regulators. We're going to ask our lawmakers. We're going to say, hi, could you please regulate this? Well, it's hard because nobody has a good understanding. And they have to get the information first. But the problem is, as soon as you do, it changes. And it changes again and again. DMA is a good example of this. Because all these things were put together a few years ago. And now, with the changes in how things are, trying to fit these things in or not. Take something as simple as OpenAI. Now, OpenAI, almost approximately a billion monthly users, right? It's got a market cap of, half a trillion, I think, last round, something like that. Very big, right? It's not currently regulated under the DMA. And somebody said, well, why not? Well, because it doesn't fit the category is one reason. I mean, there's also how long, you got a three-year thing. But the fact is, what is it? Is it a search engine? Because there are certain categories defined. What actually is it? How does it fit? Do we need new rules? Basic point being that this is a really complicated and somewhat concerning time. Because if you don't set up the rules now, it's going to be really hard down the road to create them, to bring it back if you don't like what it's created. There's a very famous Princeton professor who I can't pronounce her name's exactly right. But she talks about how the values of new technologies that come in, you see the shiny new object that's so good and you love it and it's all good. The problem is society doesn't recognize, we don't realize what the problems from that technology is until far down the road. And now it's really late because the new technology has been embedded into your society. And now it's really hard to pull it out. And you can think of a lot of examples of that one where maybe, now, one I thought of, and I checked it with ChatGPT, so it must be right. I said, would plastics work as an example of that? And ChatGPT said, yes, it would. So I'll say it's true. Because don't do that. Don't never trust. You got to verify. But when you think about it, it does. Because plastics at the beginning, well, wonderful thing. It's light. You can form it any way you want. There are lots of good uses for it. Now we read all about microplastics and the potential health dangers of that. And then, you know, the next problem is, we can set up the rules, Rules in Europe may be different. Rules in China may be different. Rules in India may be different. Even bigger issue, just here alone, think about it. Right now, we have 50 states, and we don't have a federal rule.
But can they make a federal rule? I mean, you're saying it's essentially trying to regulate around a shifting...
Well, it is, but I'd rather have one group trying it than 50. This is something that AI would be really good to have, because those electrons, they don't stop at the state border at all. They go right across. So we're going to end up with a lot of states with different rules. How's we going to do business like that? So I don't have any answers at all. I just got questions.
So that's the regulation side. What about the prospect of a digital services tax, which is something that a number of governments are thinking about? How would that impact Booking's holdings, which obviously works across a number of jurisdictions?
Well, we currently pay a huge amount in digital service taxes, primarily in Europe, but other countries too. And basically, these were they came about because certain countries felt that the tech giants weren't paying their fair share. We pay a tremendous amount of tax, more than our fair share, I would say. Much more than our fair share. We did. But here's the issue. So we have a tax, and I'm okay with taxes, and you have to pay taxes. My issue is it being applied equally and fairly to everybody? So you have an American who wants to go on a trip to Paris, let's say, books on booking.com. I'm going to have to pay a 3% tax on the revenue, digital service tax. Okay. Thing is, though, when they went, let's say they went to Google first, and they looked and they chose us, that's fine. But if instead they chose Accor, the French hotel, instead of our site, no tax, no digital service tax. Now, obviously unfair, right? Clearly unfair, which is what the first Trump administration agreed with under a 301 investigation that was done in 2019, port December 2nd, 2019, how incredibly unfair and wrong these digital service taxes were, and there was a big negotiated discussion, blah, blah, blah. We end up with a strange thing under the Biden administration, which nothing pretty much happened. And now, of course, it's back, everybody's back talking about it. My position is I am not against taxing at all. I think companies have to pay fair taxes, but they got to pay equal taxes for the same business. And when people create laws that, if you read the report on December 2nd, 2019, they said that it was clearly done to favor local companies.
Hmm. Certainly being discussed here in Washington as well. But.
And I'm very happy that it is, and I look forward, hopefully, for some good progress there.
So we've talked about regulation, the fiscal framework. What about geopolitics? We all know travel can be influenced by geopolitics, certainly right now, where we've all been covering me on the news, certainly, travel plans that have been completely upended by the current geopolitics. So how do you navigate Booking Holdings through this type of uncertainty in your industry?
Yeah, it's a horrible thing. Wars, you know, forget the fact of, you know, obviously it impacts travel terribly, but really, you know, let's start with the important part, which is terribly affects people. Horrible. We operate globally, so this is not the first time we've seen this happen. And travel, you know, there's always something happening generally, and it's always bad things happen. So the base case is everything's going to be fine, but war, you have a tidal wave melts down on a nuclear plant, you don't Japan travel, you have a volcano goes off in Iceland, you have no travel going to Europe for 10 days, you have 9/11, grounds all of the U.S., you have a pandemic happens, we have negative revenue, we're refunding more than we're getting new sales. Horrific, terrible things. So you got to be agile. You try and adapt, try and work. Do you know that Dubai now just passed Atlanta Hartsfield as the most people traveling through that airport?
Did not know that.
Just
wow.
Passed, like last month, 2 months ago. Just got the number one spot. It doesn't have nearly as many planes, but that we know that because all the planes in Dubai are really big planes, lots of people. So not as many takeoffs or landings, but more people. Think about how many people got displaced by that. Just incredible. And I'd like our AI systems to have been set up for this, to do better. As soon as the airspace closed, which happened pretty darn fast, every single person who was going to be anywhere affected by that should have been notified. Immediate changes should have been offered. Plans, what you should do, how to do things. We certainly did not have that ready to rock and roll right there. We've been good about these things in the past somewhat. when Russia invaded Ukraine, we saw that coming a bit. So we prepared for that somewhat. We evacuated our people. We were able to also set up a platform that enabled, as you recall, a huge number of refugees going westward. Remember that? And these were mostly mothers and children, women. They were mostly men. Men had to stay as martial law. We were able to, they had no housing. We were able to provide a platform that enabled every single Ukrainian refugee that needed it to get free housing from our partner hotels and homes that are on our platform. Either it was free or extremely low price, because some places couldn't afford free, but it was very low price. All you had to do was show that you are a Ukrainian refugee, and you got that. We had over 75,000 people. We were able to house them. Well, I'll tell you, it's, you know, this thing, it is having terrible effects right now on people. In terms of the macro, you guys probably know better than I do. Tell me when this war ends, and I'll tell you how long it'll take for travel to recover.
Yeah, I think we'll not be able to answer that question here tonight, certainly. But I'm going to ask you a few more questions, and then we're going to open up to all of you. So prepare your questions, keep them ready for Glenn. I do want to ask you a bit more about AI. What excites you most, and what keeps you up at night when you think about AI's impact on global travel?
The most exciting things to me is this vision of this AI-driven, connected trip, Asia in a pocket that I talked about. I want that thing badly. I just think it'd be so cool, so great, so wonderful, because it'd be so much better for people. Now, what I am concerned the most about right now is the speed at which we are moving. I speak my company, my people. We got 25,000 people. We're never moving fast enough. You can always move faster, and we should be moving faster. And I know that because I know what's happening in China. I know what I see in the valley when I go over there. Those people are back on that, you know, crazy 24/7 type thing. They're so excited. I've been in Bangalore, obviously, with offices there and everything. They're very excited too, and they're cranking too. But over, and then it's not just there. Do you know, anybody know what Falcon is? Like, Falcon's a large language model. It's out of the UAE. Pretty good stuff. I mean, it's all over the world. People want to do this stuff. It is so competitive. And if, you know, that saying, if you snooze, you lose. Mm-hmm. How many of you at your organizations have mandated all of you must learn these AI skills and have training required, and you're doing it like, everybody's supposed to take like, you have to take 4 hours off a week and spend on it to learn more about it, right? That's the things we have to be doing. And I mean, if you hire a new employee, do you like check, can you please show me your AI skill set, please? I mean, you wouldn't hire a writer who didn't know how to use one way to type a system, right? You wouldn't hire somebody to code if they didn't know how to, you test them out, can you code or not? Well, we're hiring employees yet, but we're not testing out. Do you have any AI awareness at all? That's, you know, that should be a requirement.
I saw in an interview that you were asked about the prospect of a hotel on the moon.
Yeah.
Is there going to be a hotel on the moon, and will it be bookable on Booking?
I do know the podcast you're talking about. I don't think we're going to have hotels on the moon for a long time, but I have been asked, are we going to be selling tickets for any of the rocket trips?
And will you?
We don't see that as a big market right now. But if it does become one, sure, why not?
You heard it here first. Okay, who has a question out here?
Roof Schipper, Netherlands Embassy. Just asking a question out of consumer perspective, because I am an early adapter. So I used to book actually on Weekend Away, if you remember that, and Hotwire. So I'm just curious, like, why did Booking become the dominant model? Mm-hmm. And what happened to those of yesteryear? And my other question was, listening to your painting the picture of what becomes next and the new normal, is how do we make sure that the Booking doesn't turn into Ticketmaster that squeezes out all our rent and kills off creativity and independence?
Those are two good questions. So we'll come back to the second one. The first one, so she mentioned Hotwire. Hotwire was a competitor owned by Expedia. I'm glad that you don't use that anymore. It died, actually. Did you use the word dominant? Did you say that? I think you did. So I'd like to make point very loud and very clear that we are not dominant at all. Yeah, but for you, that's good. But we have about 15%, 15% of the hotel accommodations market in Europe. obviously, the total travel business, much smaller of global stuff. But we are a large player. As I mentioned, we are number one, even though we're very small in the total industry. Now, your question is, why? How did that happen? Maybe watch Jersey Boys, the play, you know, then the movie and all that. Remember the beginning when the guy's talking about how they went from the little thing on the corner in Jersey and became the Four Seasons? And he said, how did that happen? It is four guys, you get four different answers. Same thing. I can tell you my version of why I believe it happened, but you can't test that. This cannot be scientifically tested. Why did something happen or not? And so it's fun. I can do it over drinks or something, but it's not somewhere to say it. But other people have very different opinions.
The second part of Ruth's question, which was about creativity.
Travel is the most competitive industry I can think of. And it's funny, when I was dealing with people in Brussels, regulators, and they're talking about, you know, dominance and all this, I say, let me ask you a question. Do you feel the only way you can get a hotel is booking.com? Can you tell me that over the last 10 years, can we look at your records and see how many times you'd use Booking or another one? Oh, that's not appropriate. We're not going to do that. And I'm like, really? Everybody knows that there are lots of different ways to get a hotel. Lots and lots of, there's so many damn things. You go to Google, it's like endless. You can scroll forever. There is no dominance. I have to fight every day for a sale. And that's true. Every single time, if the price is €1 lower, you're going to use the other one. If the service is just a little bit better, you're going to use the other one. And this idea from regulators who have come out and said that we are quote-unquote dominant, it's insane. But it is what the law is, and we have to follow it under the rules that are set out, and we do, and we do a very good job of it. We do everything we can. But I assure you, with these new things coming, new technologies, large things, it's, you know, there's somebody in some garage somewhere thinking up a great way to try and take our business away. And that's what we have to do. So we have to be competitive every day.
Any other questions? One more.
Hi, Glenn. My name is Joanna Guy. I lead growth strategy for Booz Allen Ventures. And before that, I actually managed distribution partnerships for Marriott International. So I'm a little familiar with this space.
Yes.
My question is about payment infrastructure. You mentioned a transformation in that space. And I'm curious whether you're thinking about stablecoins and cryptocurrency as the solution to back that infrastructure. And if so, have you doubled down on a commercial partner to secure those transfers?
Obviously, crypto is very interesting, and we certainly think a lot about stable coins and can that lower costs, can it make it easier to transfer money around the world, et cetera. And boy, it's not a day goes by that somebody's come pitch me an idea or somebody wants to do a deal with us. We haven't done it yet, but it's certainly something that we are always actively looking at, and I imagine at some point could happen. You have a big issue here. Obviously, the banks don't like the ideas quite so much because they think it's unfair. Certainly, some of the stable coin players who, you know, you're not allowed to give interest, but kind of like are or not, and it's a complicated situation. We don't feel a need this moment to jump right in, but we're definitely going to keep monitoring it.
Well, we can't let you go without asking, what is the hidden gem destination that we should all be putting on our bucket list? Where do we go?
Okay, so think about this, everyone. One of the worst things about Instagram is everybody puts a picture out of this incredibly beautiful place that they loved, right? And, you know, within, you know, a very short time, that beautiful place is no longer such a beautiful place because everybody saw that Instagram picture and they all go there. If you think I'm going to tell you, ain't happening.
Okay. Maybe later, if you can tell us all in private.
Okay. But my favorite place to go, home with my wife.
Aww. Good answer. Glenn Fogel, thank you so much for joining us on the Washington AI Network podcast. Thank you so
much. Thank you. Thank you, everybody. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you for listening.
Thank you for listening to the Washington AI Network podcast. Be sure to subscribe and join the conversation. The Washington AI Network is a bipartisan forum bringing together the top leaders and industry experts to discuss the biggest opportunities and the greatest challenges around AI. The Washington AI Network podcast is produced and recorded by Haddad Media. Thanks for listening.